Welcome to the fifth part of the Eightfold Path. We are embarking on the second half now. We're still in the ethics section, wise livelihood. Tenisiro Bhikkhu calls wise livelihood the poor stepsister of the Eightfold Path, because there are very few suttas where the Buddha actually addressed wise livelihood, beyond saying that that's how his followers should make their livings. The Buddha did condemn five ways to make a living: trading in poison, weapons, intoxicants, meat, and human beings. That is in the Business Sutta in the Anguttara Nikaya 5.177. Tenisiro Bhikkhu adds that the Buddha shied away from condemning anyone's specific line of work out of a sense of etiquette. Tenisiro Bhikkhu suggests that's because the people who had asked the Buddha about their livelihood had been engaged in it for some time and had already done whatever damage that line of work was going to do. Nowadays, we can appreciate the Buddha's refusing to make a list of wrong occupations because times change. Shoeing horses and mining coal have faded as jobs in demand. More importantly, the Buddha seemed to recognize this, and it's not the job title, but the principles involved. Tenisiro Bhikkhu says the Buddha taught that you would do well to reflect on your means of livelihood. Is it harming other beings? Does it involve lying? Does it involve unskillful mental states? If it does, maybe you should look for another occupation, which of course may take time. This may be one of the reasons, Tenisiro Bhikkhu goes on, why the Buddha observed this etiquette in talking to specific people, because a lot of people are just stuck in their occupations. And it's going to take a while, he says, for them to disentangle themselves if they should realize that their means of livelihood is unskillful. And over the years, I've talked to a lot of people who have come to this realization and indeed feel very stuck about it. There's another sutta in the Anguttara Nikaya, number 8.54, on conditions of welfare, it's called, which is for householders, that's us, lay people. It says, a householder, knowing his income and expenses, leads a balanced life, neither extravagant nor miserly, knowing that thus his income will stand in excess of his expenses, but not his expenses in excess of his income. In other words, know what you can afford and keep within your means. But in getting to this, the Buddha advised that we do live with generosity and spend as needed and as desired for a relatively pleasant life while we stay within our means. So it's pretty practical advice. A broader bit of advice is available in a sutta called the Great 40 in the Majjhima Nikaya number 117. In it, the Buddha asked, what is wrong livelihood? Scheming, persuading, hinting, belittling, and pursuing gain with gain. This is wrong livelihood. I'm sure many of us have known co-workers or bosses, partners or competitors, vendors or buyers, who act in these ways. And we may have occasionally slipped into them ourselves. The sutta goes on to say what it takes to stick to wise livelihood. Wise view tells us what is or isn't a wise way to conduct our work. It takes wise effort to abandon wrong livelihood and enter into right livelihood, and it takes wise mindfulness to stay there. So in other words, wise livelihood isn't just a job that doesn't deal in those five things. It's a job that we're able to do without slipping into behaviors that cause harm to others. And this has to do with the way we relate to other people while we're on the job. So here we see this idea of wise livelihood expanding and incorporating other parts of the Eightfold Path. Wise view, wise effort, and wise mindfulness. So both what we've already covered and what we're going to go into. Looking back to what we covered, we know that we can have many views about what's important, but with wise understanding, the guiding view is that it's about suffering, dukkha, and ending dukkha. We are wise to conduct ourselves in ways that will avoid setting up the causes and conditions that lead to dukkha for ourselves and other beings. So we're careful with our speech, and we avoid actions that can cause serious harm to individuals or to society. And specifically, the many forms of violence, theft, and sexual misconduct that we've been looking at for the past month. The Great 40 Sutta also looks forward to our next 2 months' practice with wise effort and wise mindfulness. So it's all here. All the principles of the teachings are here in wise livelihood, which I don't think is so much the poor sister of the Eightfold Path as the linchpin that holds it all together. All of these principles, as the Great 40 puts it, run and circle around wise livelihood. So much for the suttas, but before I leave them, I do want to note that livelihood is not just a concern for us lay people. It seems that several monastics in Buddha's time had little sidelines. And here the Buddha did name a long list of things that they ought not to do, and most of them involved superstition, reading palms, cards, or other objects to tell fortunes. In my last Dharma talk on the ingredients of generosity, I also touched on what the suttas had to say about safeguarding dana and teaching the Dharma to prevent that from becoming a financial transaction. that would make teaching the Dharma an unwise livelihood, and it would take the spiritual benefit out of generosity. Talking about work, let's not forget the work that's done by volunteers. Besides being an inspiration for the rest of humanity, volunteers contribute tremendously to the economy and well-being of everyone, not just those that they help directly. And often that direct assistance and the goodwill behind it go beyond any value that could be assigned to the work that they're doing. And then there's all we do for our families, friends, and organizations. Chores in the home, parenting. Talk about unpaid labor. Our creativity and its products, on and on. Economists do try to attach a dollar value to all of this work, but I suspect that they come in very low to its real worth to individuals and the entire community. So wise livelihood includes all we do, and it's a lot. These days, most contemporary teachers do expand wise livelihood, at least to include another major economic activity, which is consumption. Not only how we earn our money or other things of value, but also how we spend what we've got. In his 2010 article on right livelihood, Tanisiro Bhikkhu encouraged looking at your attitudes toward what you consume. What do you buy or take or use? He says, ideally, you should reflect while you're eating. Why are you eating now? When you put on your clothes, why are you putting these clothes on? When you fix up your house, why are you fixing it up this way? When you take medicine, why are you taking this particular medicine now? And he goes on to say, what's your motivation in everything you do? These suggestions were aimed at people who were in a monastic setting or on retreat, and they were geared toward making things enable them to practice with ease. The pleasure of food was secondary to the fact that eating sustained them for more practice, just as the rest of those consumables do. Whether or not that's how we're using the things that we possess, the key factor in our relationship to what we buy is our attitude toward getting it and using it. For example, in 2002, I bought a hybrid car, and I looked at the fact that it might reduce my gasoline costs and that it possibly would protect humans and other species from the damage that fossil fuels do to the environment. And I wanted to vote with my dollars to encourage technology that would reduce fossil fuels in automobiles. And look, it's working. Hybrids are now, you know, the last technology. The things that we buy have an impact that continues past the time of purchase. When we buy, we encourage manufacturers to make more of such things, but it has a value in the way that we use them. The attitude with which we do it will determine if they help or harm us or others. How disposable do we consider our possessions? Do we take care of them and use them well? Or do they become trash quickly? Consider the impact that trash has on us and the community and the whole planet. In the practice guides, a whole week is devoted to considering the impact of the stuff that we have. It horrifies me to think of where plastic things end up in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, where it harms a lot of marine life. And recently I found out that the sunscreen that I use contains chemicals that contribute to killing coral reefs, which are of tremendous value to a lot of forms of marine life. They're sort of the fish nurseries for a lot of species. And then there's pesticides and bees and plants. When I talk to people about wise livelihood, many say that they're just not able to engage with it, but they're thinking in terms of just those five livelihoods, those five occupations, and theirs isn't any of them. But sometimes I'll mention that years ago, my financial advisor suggested that I buy stock in a company that made liquor. And I said, no, I wasn't going to do that. She said, but in a recession, people will drink more. And I said, well, you know, that's kind of why I don't want to do it. So once we open up the notion of livelihood, it can get a lot juicier. It has to do with any way that we engage with the economic aspect of our lives. In fact, everything we do has an economic impact of some sort or another. So it comes down, really, to how we spend our time. In Bhikkhu Bodhi's book on the Eightfold Path, he talks about how we conduct ourselves on the job. Do we treat others with due respect and consideration? This calls, he says, for employers to be fair and decent with their workers and for employees to do their jobs and to treat others, their co-workers, etc., their customers, with the same respect and consideration. When we shop or engage in any of our other activities, how do we treat cashiers or clerks, secretaries, sales reps, and everyone who's doing their jobs for us? Do we treat them in the same way? As we move through our days, we need to consider the impact that all of our activities have on the interconnected web of what is needed by all forms of life. Every action we take affects the welfare of all other beings. Eventually, in some way. I hope that one of the lessons that we've learned from the massive scale of human economic foolishness has been that we indeed have the capability to annihilate all species on this planet, including ourselves. So whether you're looking at wise livelihood in terms of some poison that your company spews out into the world, or what you're having for dinner or how you treat the bus or the Uber driver. It extends to all facets of your life, and it pulls in the rest of the Eightfold Path. I remember one of the first Dharma talks that I ever heard. It was when I was a Zen student, and the abbot talked about the care with which an elephant places her foot as she walks. Elephants have been called the landscape architects of the jungle. They really have an impact with every step they take. And so do we. We should be just as careful as we tread this earth. Careful of those we do any sort of business with, those we meet at random, and all those creatures we don't even notice that we're affecting, and the very planet itself. We can be terribly powerful or powerfully kind in our impact on the world. It's our choice, and all we've learned about the Eightfold Path and the three parts left for us to explore will help us live wisely, which is wise livelihood. Thank you. I want to take a minute to mention this month's practice guides. We have 5 weeks until the next talk in this series. And right livelihood is so expansive that it kind of blends into the next part of the path, which is wise effort. So week 5's practices will begin this transition by taking a look at how we accomplish changing our activities. Back when we were dealing with wise understanding and wise intention, almost everybody wanted to know how they would change anything that they could see wasn't in keeping with those parts of the path. Well, that's what we'll begin to work on in week 5, exploring how to change your thinking and your conduct. If you feel that you're engaged in any aspect of your livelihood that isn't wise. So there are handouts to the practice guides on the table by the front door, and I'm happy to announce that finally all of the materials from the course so far are now on the website. Some of you are grinning like it's your secret that you know that, but it's on a page of its own entitled 2018 to 19 Eightfold Path Course. It's on the home page in the navigation column over to the left of the page. And there are 2 things that are missing, but we're working on it. And this week's materials will be on there as soon as possible. So, there's a Donna basket in the back if anyone needs to leave early. The one up here has an envelope in it for any Donna that you may want to give for aspects of the Eightfold Path Course other than this Dharma talk. So the practice guides, communication during the month, whatever. And if you aren't getting our weekly emails and you want to, please clearly write your name and email address on the sign-in sheet over by the door, that crowded table. So thank you. Any comments, questions?